Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do a podcast episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, September 11th, 2016. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. It would be great for you to do that. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 184 of the show. I have a very special guest, a man, a comedian by the name of Andy Sanford. I'm going to talk to him in a few minutes. I'm not going to talk to him in a few minutes because I talked to him a couple weeks ago. And you're going to hear that conversation that I had with him 2 weeks ago in a few minutes right now. In a few minutes right now. I don't know. Look, I've had a busy few days. I just actually got back from the Maryland, D.C. area, from the DMV. Do people still say DMV? I don't even know. The Maryland, D.C. area, the greater metropolitan area of Washington, D.C., I don't even know if that's right. I was doing some shows down there, and I'm back, and I got back a little, like maybe this afternoon, watched a little football. Right now, as I'm recording this intro, Detroit is playing Indianapolis, and the Colts are on the, what are they on, like maybe the 5-yard line, and they're about to win the game, hopefully, maybe. Oh, they just won the game. Okay. Andrew Luck just threw a touchdown to some guy named Doyle, and looks like they're going to beat the Lions, and they're going to go 1-0. This has been a shitty opening weekend, I think, for the NFL, because I don't think any black quarterbacks won this week. So Cam Newton got the shit hit knocked out of him. I'm glad that I didn't have to see that game because I was at a show, but my God, no, Jameis won. All right, Jameis beat the Falcons. So we good right there, young. Jameis beat the Falcons. I'm trying to see, Buffalo lost. Yeah, it looks like, I think Jameis was the only, yeah, RG3 might be hurt. So yeah, so the whole kneeling or the national anthem protest, Seattle did something where they interlocked with other people. Like, I mean, they didn't really have to do anything if they're going to say, but it's just like a retort to Kaepernick's protest. I really think they didn't have to do anything. You just stand up for the anthem if you believe in it. And that's it. That was kind of dumb. I don't know. And I just saw before I turned this thing on, apparently during NFL Countdown, Trent Dilfer said something about Kaepernick's protest being selfish. And the look that Randy Moss gave him was just priceless. Like, what are you talking about, dude? So I'm excited to see what Randy Moss brings to that team, because I always like Randy Moss, and it seems like he's going to be a good addition. So that's good. So we got one black quarterback win this week. So that's pretty good. That's good. Good for Jameis. So yeah, I'm back in New Jersey in this apartment that I need to clean. I need to just throw a lot of shit away. Just looking at this place just makes me, I don't know. Yeah, I gotta get my life together. So I did a show at the 13.5% wine bar, and with Petey Steele and Josh Coderna. They did not promote the show. Something happened to where there were only 6 people there at the show, and we gave those 6 people a good show. I tweeted that, and I believe I stand behind my tweets. Josh Coderna and Petey Steele are comedy soldiers. They braved through it. They opened up the show, and then I closed it out, and we had a good time. And then afterwards, we got pizza at this place. I don't even know where the hell it was, but it was in Hampton, Baltimore, Hampton, Maryland, Baltimore. It's like a town or a subsidiary of Baltimore. I don't know what they call these towns. I'm always interested in geography. That's one thing. That's like a low key thing that I'm interested in. So it's a neighborhood. Okay, it's a neighborhood located in northern Baltimore, Maryland, United States. Roughly triangular in shape. It is bounded to the east by the neighborhood Wyman Park at Keswick Road. Okay, it's not far from Johns Hopkins. Okay. So and they braved through it, and it just sucks when I'm not a draw. I'm just a dude that's funny and tells some jokes. I'm a funny guy that tells jokes. And if you don't promote the show, people aren't going to show up. And I pulled up there, and they asked us if we were going to need a microphone. And this was clearly people that didn't know how to produce a show and whatever. And it just didn't work out. But I think that was their first time doing a comedy show. It was one of those, I guess, for them and for me, it was one of those learning experiences where can you make these four people laugh? If you can make four people and laugh and engage them, and they really, I think those people really had a genuine time. They wanted to buy us drinks. I don't know. I think they liked the show, and then maybe they felt sorry for us. I don't know, but we still got paid, and it ended up being a good, fun hang with Josh and Petey. And after the show, I did Josh's podcast, The Digression Session. So that should be coming up pretty soon. So it ended up being a pretty good night. And before the show, I saw this movie called War Dogs with, oh my God, what's wrong with me? I'm becoming that dude that's forgetting people's names. Oh my God. What, I see their faces. I see Jonah Hill and Miles Teller. Wow. I just drew a blank. I'm tired. I've had a long week. And I'll read you the blurb. With the war in Iraq raging on, Ephraim Diveroli offers childhood friend David Packhouse a chance to make big bucks by becoming an international arms dealer. Together, they exploit a government initiative that allows businesses to bid on U.S. military contracts. Starting small allows the duo to rake in money and live the high life. They soon find themselves in over their heads after landing a $300 million deal to supply Afghan forces, a deal that puts them in business with some very shady people. And this movie was directed by Todd Phillips. I really enjoyed this movie. It was very interesting to me. And I figured something out. I think this is a real superhero movie. This was based on a true story from a Rolling Stones article? A Rolling Stone article? Yes, a Rolling Stone article by Guy Lawson. And then he wrote a book called Arms and the Dudes. And these guys do this. They get arrested for conspiracy. One of the dudes got 4 years in prison, and the other dude got seven months house arrest. Like, and then they got to make a movie about it. Like, this movie was better than Captain America: Civil War. These dudes are the real superheroes. The Wolf of Wall Street dude. I mean, this guy got locked up, and you know he's pretty much gonna become an icon for that movie. I don't know, maybe he's not an icon, but a hero. I mean, did all this illegal shit and goes to jail for a little bit. What is his name? Jordan Belfort or whatever. So man, it's those are the superheroes. And someone on Twitter. I tweeted, War Dogs was a good ass movie, and I put a bunch of emojis relating to the movie up, and one guy was like, yeah, I mean, I liked it, but I wish they would have gotten, I wish they would have been, they would have actually had more, what's like bigger, what the fuck did the guy say? I'm going to try to find this. Here we go, looking for the thing. Yeah, I would, even in their relationship, I left feeling kind of unsatisfied. I think I wanted bigger consequences for their actions. And I was like, you know why they're not going to be in trouble, man. They're white. And good movie, but those are the real superheroes. What happened? I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute. Why are the lions cheering? Let me rewind this. Did they miss a field? They missed it. Oh, this dude missed an extra point. Are you serious? Hold on a minute. Hold on, young. Breaking news. You, as the game, you already get the score. Oh, so Indy scored, and then Detroit moved the ball up, and they got a... It looks like they... So, wow, Detroit won. Holy shit. So how did they get the ball down that fast? I'm just recording and not. So they just moved the ball. All right. Well, I thought Indianapolis was going to win. Okay. Neither one of these teams means anything to me. So, yeah, War Dogs was good. I recommend it. Probably one of the better movies of the year that I've seen. So that was Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I emceed at the Arlington Draft House, one of my favorite places to do comedy. I got added to the show, and so I emceed and for Henry Cho, and they were fun shows. Henry was really cool. I got to sit down and talk to him, and also the feature Ron Hortman. So both of those dudes are going to be on upcoming episodes of the podcast. It was just a good, chill weekend. Got to see my parents, and I did the Three Guys On podcast. So those two episodes are going to be out this week, Monday and Thursday. So had a good time, had a good, busy, super productive weekend of doing comedy and comedy related things. I think that is all that I want to talk about right now. And let's talk a little bit about Andy Sanford. Andy, I want to say I met him maybe a year or two ago, just doing shows with him. And he's a really funny dude. He's been on Conan. He's got an album out called Me the Whole Time, which is a very funny album. He's a native of Atlanta, Georgia. And speaking of Atlanta, gosh darn it, that Donald Glover show, Atlanta, is really good. Really fucking good. It's scary good. It's scary how good that show is. Really, really enjoying the first two episodes. Andy's really funny, and he's one of Clark Jones's roommates. And when I saw that he lived there, I was like, oh, I got to come back, dude, and get you on. And he agreed, and we talked for a bit, and then we got burritos after out in Bushwick. And hey, without further ado, this is my conversation with the very funny Andy Sanford. I did not mean to freak you out with the first time. Did I just turn on like an announcer voice and like, hey, Andy, so.
No, I wouldn't. I didn't mean to look shocked.
Yeah. There's a couple of reasons why I wanted you to on. One, because wanted to have you on, but and then didn't realize that you lived here with Clark. Mm-hmm. And mainly Facebook related. You had a post a couple of days ago that was really good, and then you had one that I really liked, just talking about how people just on Facebook pontificate all the time, and then they call themselves comedians and they don't, and it just doesn't seem like people are performing.
Well, I didn't even know which, but I hate as soon as you're like, oh, I want you on because I have I see you on Facebook. I'm like, oh no, am I being known for my Facebook?
No.
I hate that when people think Facebook like is comedy, you know?
Right.
Like, because I think people just get consumed on there and they just can't stop thinking about it. and then they don't do anything in real life.
That's true. I mean, that's what I find. I just like, well, just write some jokes, get on stage, and you don't really. And then when you see these people that are these blowhards on Facebook and you see them on stage, you're like, that's it? You're just like, show me something.
Yeah, that's what you're fighting about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. Some people get so like sanctimonious on there. Mm-hmm. You know? It's like everyone's waiting for their point or something. I think that's what, who was it? It was Adam Sokol, I think. He had some joke about every post on Facebook from a comedian. It just sounds like they've been pressed for a response, like from the press or something.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a press release. That's what.
That's
like
funny.
No one's asking.
Yeah.
No one wants to
Nobody
know.
Nobody gives a shit.
No one cares. It's like, all right, fine. Here's my take. Okay. And it's like, you don't. No one was asking for it.
And did you just get kind of fed up? Because that was a post that was like, I think I added to that post. I put my favorite post, picture post. I'm really into.
Oh, kid's face or something.
Yeah, this kid at the. He was at a. I think he was at the College World Series. And he was playing with the camera, and he had this really shocked face. I like that one. Or have you been watching Stranger Things?
Yeah, I watched all of that. Like,
okay,
that
so 11, when she has the nosebleed, like when somebody says something that's really like powerful or profound, I usually go with those two.
Nice.
So that's my contribution to Facebook is the picture, the photo comments, reacting to people's posts.
Usually my only contribution is just like dumb jokes.
Yeah,
I just like. Before I'm writing anything like that I really want to do, I just like make myself write some joke. Mm-hmm. And that's usually what ends up on Facebook.
Yeah.
And sometimes people, I mean, it'll just be like some clever or dumb one-liner thing. And then I've had people ask me if, are you going to do that on stage? And I'm like, no, probably not. And then they'll go, well, can I do it?
I'm like, no. What?
No, they just live here.
Wow.
But I get annoyed with that. Even if I have like a joke that does well on Facebook, I almost want to delete it because people will say stuff like, "Oh, this is the best joke I've ever seen you do," and I'm like, "This isn't even my comedy."
Like, yeah,
yeah. Where I'm like, I'm not a one-liner guy, or really.
No, you're not. And I listened to your album, Me, the whole time, and it really was you. The whole time, you know, just telling your story, you know. So,
well, the reason it's called that is because I was in a thing called the Beards of Comedy with three other dudes, Dave Stone, Joe Zimmerman, and TJ Young.
Okay.
And anyway, we did two albums, and we're all 1/4 of each album. And then, so when I was doing my first album, that happens to be a punchline that I say in a joke. And it is actually me the whole time instead of three other dudes.
Okay.
That's why I called it that.
Can we talk about your process? One of the things that I enjoyed about you is just a couple of years ago you did Conan and you wrote a piece about
the whole
it was last year, right? Yeah. And it was like the how did you get that and
yeah, I kinda regret writing that though,
why?
I'll be honest. Well, it's not that I regret writing, it's just like this website asked me if I would write about it, and I don't know, I made it clear that I was like, this is not some sort of, this is how I got Conan or some shit,
right?
Like some instructional thing, because I know that's what people would like to read. It's like something that delusional. And so I was like, well, I'll just make sure I write it not that way. And then they literally changed the title of the thing. I called it How'd You Get That, because it's like that's the question everybody asks you.
Sure.
And then they changed it to how to get booked on Conan or something. And I was fucking livid. I was like so mad.
Did you call them?
Yeah, I messaged them and called them, and they were like, oh, I think it's clear that that's an editor's headline or something like that. And I was
nobody
like,
knows
God damn
that.
It.
Yeah,
I was people... like, that's why I just don't. I almost always regret doing anything because, like, you know, so, I don't know, it didn't have to be out there, but I'm not proud of it or something, but no. I just hate the hassle that comes with it, like, and then people, act like you're trying to have some other agenda. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, they just they try to have another agenda.
Oh well, then a bunch of you know people hit you up about doing. Like they don't read it at all, and they're like, "Could you, hey, could you give me the Conan Booker's email?" Or
something. Part of it is your talent.
Just crazy people. You know, it puts you in touch with the fringe of people trying to do comedy or people who like comedy, and there's some crazy people.
What kind of stuff do you get? It's just like,
You just get messages that are just like. From another, you know, I'm just like, well, this person just isn't even thinking, like, or that don't know me at all, or say they're coming up. You live in New York. I'm sure you've had people hit you up about doing shows in New York that you're like, that's you're not a person that I know.
Yeah, that some guy that had more, has way more Twitter followers than me, and has, I think that has like more a little more exposure, was asking me. About shows, and I said, well, I don't book any shows, and some people will send me clips and say, look at my comedy, and I said, well, I don't book anything. I don't know.
Yeah, why do I need to see a video?
Yeah,
I literally don't. I've just got done. I'm no longer associated with any show or anything like that. I was doing a show with Noah Garden Swartz and Steve Forrest, Freaknik, Comedy Freaknik. But then now we passed that over to some other Atlanta people.
Okay.
That have moved here. So I feel.
Is that the Creek?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's great. I mean, I wasn't, you know, it was a once a month thing for us anyway. But I always felt bad if people were just hitting me up about doing it. And I'm like, God, I don't really book this thing, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I, you know, I technically did. But now I can just be like, I don't book anything.
Leave me alone.
Can't help you out. I don't know you.
Do you find that there's freedom in that, that you're away from that now?
Yeah, sure.
You don't have to stress out about it?
Well, because I like helping people out. Any kind. Because in comedy, you really can at like so many different levels. Like as soon as you get anything, it's pretty easy.
It's really true. I mean, I found the most generosity and kindness that I've had in show business to be from comics.
Oh yeah.
Regardless of what level they're on. I mean,
for sure.
And it's like, whether it could be like a, like someone like you opening for somebody or someone letting you do guest spots. And then, I try to return the favor. Like if one, like doing a show in a couple of weeks and a guy messaged me who I know and he said, hey, can I come do a guest spot? Sure.
Yeah. Well, that's the only, at least in my experience, the only thing that really comes through is something a friend or a comic does for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one else gives. I mean, no one gives a shit. Like, because no one asks any of us to do this. Like,
right.
That's no true. One is like, please try to tell comedy for a living. Like, we're the only people that think that about ourselves. So,
right.
Like, because of that. It's hard to, no one's thinking about you. So the only people that will even think about you because you're in the same position or we're trying to do the same thing as other comics.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, who else gives a shit?
And it's cool. I think sometimes we do get caught up on, whether it be stardom or just trying to reach whatever level you're trying to reach. And then, you know, just having this conversation with other performers. To some degree, you've already made it, you know. Yeah. You're making it. You know, when someone asks you to do a show and you don't have to reach out to them, and they say, "Hey, can you do this show? Uh-huh. It pays this amount. It's here," and that's a great feeling. I remember 4 or 5 years ago, I wasn't in that place.
Yeah,
you know. So it's almost like just charting those steps, and it's hard to be thankful.
Yeah,
I feel like it's hard to.
Yeah, because even when it's good, it you know, it's fucking hard. Sometimes.
Yeah,
like
it's true.
Like for real, people, like it's hard to be thankful. I think because it's like, it's hard to even know that you should be. You know,
very true.
Because it's always hard.
Yeah,
there is literally no resting on laurels or anything.
Like, you can't, because it's. I was telling you and Clark earlier before we started about doing some shows, doing a weekend of shows, mm-hmm. hosting, and that one show that just sucks. And it's horrible.
Sure.
And it made me question, like, should I be fucking doing this? This was this was Friday night. I was like, damn it. And everybody knew that the crowd was shit. the staff,
yeah,
the managers, the other comics.
It doesn't make it any better,
and
though.
It doesn't, no. And I had to sit with that until I got on stage 24 hours later.
Yeah.
And I had to redeem myself, and I was trying to figure out, can I even get
to that point? Is it even redemption, or is it just getting the taste out of your mouth? That's what I
think it's a little bit of both. I think it's a little bit of both.
I don't know. I feel much better when I, so I guess it is redemption for me, but yeah. I'm pretty quick to, you know, not beat myself up too hard if I know for a fact that, you know, if you can just logically be like, well, this is a good reason why, you know, there was two ladies making out on the floor. That was one show where I was like, well, can I really put that on me?
Yeah.
but like for the most part, it's just getting that last one that I hated. I hate doing fine more than bombing. I don't care about bombing, really.
Doing fine is one of those things,
you're
too.
Locked into just doing jokes, and then they never really give you that much past that, and then you're like, well, what do I do here?
Is it because you don't learn anything when you're
doing
fine?
Yeah, it's just like you're just stuck doing some shit, then you know it'll just get a slightly not as good reaction as you're used to.
Yeah.
And then you just get out of there. it's the worst.
It's one of those things where it's just the struggle between, like, for me, I come from the theater world, and I know when I first started doing stand-up, it was just sort of like, I'm saying this. This is supposed to elicit a laugh. This, and this. But it can't. It's not going to be like that.
Yeah.
It's just that fight to really become lucid on stage and to be... To have that plan, you have your set list that you're going to do, but to really just be like open to the moment and open to what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, the most annoying part I think about stand up is like when you're or, you know, getting better at it and stuff is I'm losing my train of thought because
getting better at stand up,
Yeah, you can't...
Well, you said you can't rest on your laurels.
Yeah, you can't. And then you also, like, will just have sets where you just have to write that off and not even That's think true. It. Really be like, well, I don't know exactly what happened there. But I never, like, literally question, you know, am I funny or should I keep doing it? Like, I'm pretty adversarial with the audience in my head. Like,
yeah,
to a point where I don't tell other people about it. But it's like I always keep in mind, like, I know what I'm doing. I'm on stage because I know what I'm doing, and they're down there because they don't. And so,
yeah,
like,
yeah, it's
like,
true.
I don't
it's
get. True. I mean, it's way too. There's way too many variables and we're the only constant. We're the one doing our jokes, and the audience changes. So, like, when there's one show, it's like obviously an anomaly, you know.
You're right.
But yeah, it's hard to remember that.
It's true. It's in that moment and in that time, it's hard to. You know, a lot of people get into the performing arts to control maybe an anxiety or something, or control the way that people perceive them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I'm in control of you guys laughing at me or what have you. I think there's a variety of reasons why I got into it, but one is to entertain, to be funny, because I get that. I enjoy it for its intrinsic value, and then there's the other neuroses and everything attached to it too. But
that's
the primary goal.
That's what you ever get exhausted watching someone be funny? Now I do when I
like just somebody really killing.
Like if I'm at a party or something, not comedy. Okay. Just like I'm at a party or something. I'm very comfortable being completely boring because. I just don't feel that need to. I just get that out on stage or something. But then I'll see someone that is just like really working hard to being a funny guy, and they could be funny, but I'm just like, oh god, that's exhausting.
It's kind of
and
like,
for what?
Yeah, it's kind of like it's against the social norm, like going to a movie.
Yeah.
And because you and I and other comics have that outlet. You just want to, you don't always have to be on. Like, I've been in conservatory where people always are on and they're always on 10. But then when you just want to go see a movie, there's somebody yelling out at the screen And it's like they're trying really hard.
Yeah, dude, just fucking relax.
At the office party, like everybody's getting pizza, and that guy's that's trying to crack those jokes.
We get that more than other people, though, because some people have a weird thing with wanting to make a comedian laugh. And I'm like, well, that's... You really shouldn't put that pressure on yourself because...
It would be kind of hard.
Well, and it also would be like, I'm way more likely to laugh if someone just falls down or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
There is no clever joke that the guy at the office is going to make that is going to really, you know, wow me or something. I would much more laugh at just something really stupid.
Yeah.
Because that's not what I do.
A lot of those times, man, when people say stuff, it's offensive, but I don't get... Yeah. I don't know if that's the right word. I don't say, hey, man, that's wrong. But it's just like, ooh, it's just kind of like, oh, boy.
Yeah, well, they think people love to, like they're being edgy or something.
Sure.
I don't even laugh at that. I don't even, like, I seriously, yesterday I laughed for, like, 30 minutes to myself just thinking about things that actually make me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just because I was changing channels, and I have DirecTV, so it's like... There's a bunch of fake channels that are just infomercials.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them was called Droopy Neck Syndrome.
What?
And the first line of the description said, pick your neck up off the ground. it was about some cream or something that for women's necks or something. But just the fact that it just said Droopy Neck Syndrome, I was just laughing for like half an hour. So, no, I don't think it's funny when people... are trying to make jokes to me, you know?
Yeah, just something that's in the moment usually at work you just notice, there's a couple of guys there that when they're not there, it's boring.
Yeah.
And you just kind of wish when that person's around, you're glad that they're around. I have those people.
I've never worked in an office, though.
Lucky you, man.
Yeah.
What kind of jobs did you have coming up?
Shitty ones. I always worked some job since I was like 16 mm-hmm. or so, like a movie theater or something. And then mostly I just got all the jobs that I made any money at were driving related. Like I was a courier, or like I was like a legal courier. Like
in the city or in Atlanta?
Atlanta.
Now, are you from Atlanta?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm from Atlanta.
What was that like growing up?
It was cool. I mean, it's different than here, for sure. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I grew up in a very, I was kind of near, like, where I went to high school, it's on Buford Highway, which is kind of our Chinatown. I grew up with, probably my high school was like, it was like evenly divided of, it was like every race of people.
Okay.
And so it was just very, I know. It was nice. It was, you know, cool. I've been to other places where, like, I'm amazed at how, you know, it's weird that I was in the South, but I was the least segregated place I ever been, as opposed to, like, I would go to Boston, and I was, like, amazed that, like, just the attitude there. It's weird. It's, like, a different world to me.
So it was progressive down there where you were?
Yeah, but just by default.
It's not, okay.
You know, I wouldn't say there was progressive-minded people. I don't know. It was I happened to grow up in that part of Atlanta that's very different than the other part.
I've just been to the airport.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Everyone's been to the airport, but it's
I was transferring from I was taking Delta from Newark to San Francisco.
Yeah,
that's a main hub, right? The Delta.
Oh yeah, it is a Delta hub, and it's fun. I always every time I think of the airport, I think of when you're leaving and you get onto the highway. It's just you immediately hit nightmare traffic of Atlanta, and then there's a sign that says, you know, Mayor Kasim Reed welcomes you to Atlanta. And you're just like, what an asshole! It just makes me hate it every time. I'm glad I don't drive here.
But it's pretty brutal, but it's some days are better than others.
I'm just glad I'm not in a situation where I have to.
Or you have to.
Because every job I had after, like, courier, I was a courier, and it was a job where you didn't want to mess up because...
Were you riding a bike or you were
driving? No, driving.
Okay.
In Atlanta, it's a sprawled out city, so it's you have to drive like all around and just be in traffic all the time. But it was like a job that I didn't want to disappoint the boss and stuff because you kind of had to take it seriously. And then when I started doing comedy, I told him, I was like, I need a job where I can clock in, not give a shit, you know? And he was like, yeah, I understand. So then I just started delivering pizzas, which was less money, but I did not care. And I just wrote jokes the whole time.
So when did you start? Let's get into a little bit of origin story stuff since we're talking about your homeland.
Yeah.
Your hometown. So when did you start? What was your life like before stand up? What would you
well, there was a lot of
mom, what did mom and dad do and all that?
Dad died when I was really young. It's okay. And then my mom was she was busy. I don't know. She does a lot of, she was a singer, hairdresser. Like she sang at weddings, stuff like that. Hairdresser, did voiceover work.
That's dope.
She paints furniture and sells it. She does a million things.
But, so it's in the family.
Yeah, not the furniture part.
Well, I mean, performing and voiceover work, acting.
Oh, yeah. She's absolutely Marcia Sanford. She, when she visits, she comes, she'll go to Cobra Club on Friday. They have, the comedy show, and then after is karaoke.
Okay.
My mom always does the karaoke, and then it's just, she's like, she's on, you know, like, there's a bunch hipsters chanting Marsha.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know they did care. I've done that once, and I'm doing it next month.
Yeah.
So I got to stay
yeah,
for
it's
that.
Yeah, it's a fun time. It's on Friday, you know?
Yeah.
That place gets a little crowded, though. Sometimes I got to break out.
Oh, but just being around a lot of people?
Yeah.
You don't like being around a lot of people?
No, it's fine. I mean, you know, it just... It sucks when it's you can't move.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, my mom visits there and like that's her favorite part. So she still performs for sure.
Okay.
And I grew up with her best friend Karen Mills is a comedian, and she started she like moved in with us, and so I grew up with a comedian sort of when I was like 10 or 11. And but other than that, that's how I It's my origin story or whatever.
Just kind of with your mom, artistic mom, and the living with a comedian.
Yeah. But it's weird. I didn't do comedy like right away or anything. Like I partied and did, I was just kind of in the poker world, like cash games and stuff.
What's that like?
It's, it's pretty intense. I don't know. It's weird. Like I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I just loved. I liked playing poker and stuff.
Did you go to school? Did you go to college?
No, I dropped out of high school.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Why'd you drop out?
I hated school. I mean, I just literally could not stand it.
Because looking at you, like your comedy is you like the just knowing a little bit about you, it's like you've had an interesting past. Yeah. And look at you, you wouldn't think that you look like a.
Well,
you look like a bank manager.
Well,
or a graphic designer.
Well, that's good. You know, they let me close to the money.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's where I look like a lot of everyone I've met that looks like me has the opposite story of me. Like they all went to college or whatever, and that's what they did till they were like 24 or something. And it was just like I was in a whole different world or whatever. I just dropped out of high school because. I just saw that there was too much I'd have to do, and I was like, I'm not going to be a fucking 19-year-old getting out of high school. That's no. I just didn't care for it. It didn't do anything for me, and I have no memories from it.
Was your mom just like...
My mom was, it sucked because that was like a point of strife for me growing up. Was like I just sucked at school, and my mom was real busy and stuff, and so when they... You know, when they have parent-teacher conference, things like that, all the teachers are just like, well, we know he knows his stuff, he just won't do the work or something. And I wish it was that easy. There's more to it. And for whatever reason, I just couldn't do that shit, like busy work and stuff like that. And So it was like, you know, it was caused a lot of problems all the way through me dropping out of high school. But my mom's you know, somehow supportive of me, pretty, like, very supportive. And so, like, even after I dropped out of high school and got, like, you know, took the GED thing, and they mailed it to my house, and she was, like, all proud when she was, yeah. Like, she was like, oh, look, it's your diploma. I was like, put that shit away. Because I just was glad to be done with it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So I just instead of college or whatever, I just got into what, you know, some kind of fucked up stuff. Yeah, you know, I just did a lot of drugs and I dealt drugs. And
do you have any stories from that, or like, was it yeah. was it poker involved, or
yeah?
What is that life like? Because the only thing I can think of is like Rounders or something. Or
yeah, it's kind of like that, but not, you know, we weren't playing on that scale. We were just, I mean, but you know, we had no respect for money, so it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. I still, you know, struggle to make sure I have some respect for money.
Sure.
Because I need it later when I, you know. But at the time, like, you know, I was just all cash. I'd either be carrying several thousand dollars or I'd have $5 to my name or whatever. Like, it was just kind of up and down. But we used to run a poker game and we made money from that. And then we got robbed. Like home invaded type thing, and that's the end of that game. And you know, also I just wanted to step out after, like, I had a gun to my head for a while and had to talk this guy out of shit. I wrote a thing about it, but you know, it was kind of fun to see who was like in it, who had a similar situation before they did comedy, like mm-hmm. they were involved in something that was super sketchy.
The more that I talk to people on these shows, it's just, I feel like I'm just boring as fuck.
Well, that's fine.
It's not that, like, it's wow. So because they knew you were running this game, they decided to rob you.
Well, no, it wasn't exactly that. What happened was, how it happened, now I know, is when we people playing the game, we told them, we don't care what drugs you do or whatever, you know, if you smoke weed, just go ahead and smoke it at the table. We don't care if you do coke and stuff, go in the bathroom, whatever it is, don't meet up here and get drugs of any kind here, just bring them, you know. And someone met up with their dealer there or something, and that guy's cousin was with him, who is sketchy and was bragging about, I don't know, playing the game or something. And they got the impression that we were like some huge game or something like that. So they came back and robbed us. And they didn't know what they were doing. Because there are people that rob poker games and they know that the money is in one place and it's not right there or whatever. And these guys were just... But that's why it sketched me out. Because yeah. They looked nervous and they had a gun to my head. And they were freaked out because our roommate ran out as soon as they came in. They heard somebody run out the front. Mm-hmm. So they were just very on edge. So I was like thinking to myself, I got to, you know, talk these guys out of killing everybody.
And how'd you do it?
Well, I had a, this was at the time I also would deliver sandwiches for Jimmy John's sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I had like a fat wad of ones in my pocket. And I was dealing the game, so I think they assumed that that I had the money or something like that. So I was just like, and they had a trash bag, so I just threw a big fat wad of cash, but it was all ones. And I was just like, there you go, it's the money. And really, it was in a different room or something. I thought that actually it was on my friend
that ran away.
Who was sitting? No, he was sitting right there,
and he didn't say anything.
And he just didn't say anything, and they just were nervous, so they didn't ask. So, yeah. They almost got. They could have got like $4,000 or $5,000 or something like that. But it, and I don't care about that. It's just like they were just idiots, and that's what worried me was how,
because anything could happen.
Frantic they were,
right?
And I was just like, you know, hey, all right, take it. It's weird that you can become like really calm when you got a gun to your head, I think. Mm-hmm. Just because you, when you literally know that you're like a, you know, a very small hair trigger away from getting your brains blown out, you're not going to freak out too much.
Jesus.
I didn't. And there was like the dudes we were playing with are crazy. Like this guy, Emilio, who's just a degenerate gambler. To give you a backstory on him, he once won a poker tournament in Biloxi, won like $15,000 or no, $12,000, something like that. And on the drive home, saw a dog track and fucking
blew all
of it at a dog track. So these are the kind of people.
Yeah.
This guy's got a gun to his head and they're telling him, they say, hurry up, fat boy, or something like that. And he goes, I'm going as fast as I can and I'm not fat, or something like that. He just said, don't call me fat boy or something. I'm like, dude, shut the fuck up. So that's.
How old were you?
I was like 22.
Okay.
And after that broke up, I was like, I'm going to stay away from that poker world for a while. And I pretty much right after that is when it wasn't after that. It was, I was a courier, and then I kind of was super depressed and had this kind of meltdown type situation. And
do you know why you had the cause of the meltdown? Or
I don't exactly. It was like, it's just a depression thing that pops up. And it was just, I just didn't have a lot going for me right then. And then I just always wanted to do comedy in some way. And I even would like write jokes that if I ever did comedy, I might do this joke or something like that. So then I had nothing else going on, so I just started doing it and told myself, like, if this is something that I really think I could do, then I'm just going to do nothing but that. And so I did. Pretty much for the first time, I was just like, yeah, this is all I'm going to do.
At 22, 23?
23, I think. It was at Star Bar in Atlanta, where I...
I've heard of it.
That's
where you recorded your album there,
that's
right?
Where I recorded my album. It's where I recorded the special that is about to come out. And
oh, cool.
Or, I don't know, it's not about to come out. It's just done.
Oh, you just got to shop it and figure out where you're going to...
Yeah, that's what we're kind of doing right now. It's annoying. But, there's... I'm happy with it, so...
So you started early. You started young doing it.
Well, I felt like I did a lot of shit before I did comedy.
I
put it off because... I guess because I was aware of comedy and something that was cool to do when I was a little kid. So I guess... I don't know. I felt like, because I know guys that started at 19 and 18, which is crazy. I mean,
like a Pete Davidson.
Well, my buddy Caleb Simon. He started when he was 19. And he's like, I mean, his head's on pretty straight and stuff. And I forget that he's like, you know, 25 now or something, 26.
Yeah, he's been doing it for a while.
I can't remember. But yeah, he's killer. But a lot of times, I mean, I don't regret starting. I didn't start late. I started in my 20s. But when there are people I know that started when they were 29, 30. And
that's me.
They worry about it, but I don't. I wouldn't, because what's it matter?
You have something to talk about. Like,
yeah, you have something to talk about. And you can get as good as you get or whatever in a short time or a long time. It's like...
That's true.
When people start when they're 18, 19, they can... Surely, unless there's a certain case, no one wants to hear what they have to say. I never want to hear what almost anyone like under 28 has to say. But they get better at the part of performing and being comfortable from the audience. But you can pick that up at any time. So
that's
I don't know. I don't regret. You're not, because I'm 33. If I started when I was 17, I wouldn't be like that much better, you know. I'm still me.
Yeah, that's true.
How long does it take to find that out, you know?
I think you're right. I mean, sometimes you think about, oh, should I have started? I would have been in this class or this group of people.
Mm-hmm.
But you pretty much start whenever you start, and then it's up to you to put the work in.
I don't know. I feel almost bad for people now that I don't know. They start with, they miss out on like a lot of the best parts of doing comedy. To me, is when I started, it wasn't automatically a career or something. I kind of already knew like that would be something great that I would want to work toward, but I still just thought of it as just figuring out comedy or just doing it.
Right.
The fun of doing it.
And when I talked to Clark, we were talking about how it seems like in New York, he was talking about starting in Chicago, industry wasn't around all the time, and it was about being funny and then cultivating the funny and then trying to, you know, make it a commodity. And that's something, when I started, there was an ignorance because I started here, and it was just sort of like, I just wanted, you know, just trying to get funny, doing the open mics, getting excited about getting booked on unpaid shows. And then it just seems like maybe within the last 3 or 4 years, it's been like, oh, industry.
It's
kind of...
Here is weird because it connects two worlds that it's like, it connects like the industry part of it and the just starting everybody sucks part.
Right.
And the people don't get to see a lot of that in between, like... Because I'm the same with Atlanta. Atlanta, there was no industry. Like, I mean, there technically maybe like Adult Swim is there.
Okay.
But it's not like they're out there, you know, combing the comedy scene. Right. No one is. No one. And I like it that way. It should be that way. It would be fucking stupid if you had to start doing comedy knowing that there's people that you're showcasing at times, stuff like that's. You have no freedom at all to find anything out. And that's why I don't get stoked when, people misunderstand. They think that because a lot of things are being filmed in Georgia because of the tax break and stuff, and they're setting up studios and all this. I'm like,
right.
Central Casting is still going to be the same place, New York, LA, all that.
It's true.
And it's just nothing to get excited about unless you have a union job, you know, building sets.
And you can work.
Yeah, then that's cool. But comedy-wise and stuff, just why not embrace the part where no one does care what you're doing? That's good.
I was listening to Patton Oswalt on Jay Moore's podcast maybe a couple years ago, and he was saying, you know, like, and some of our friends have done these half hours and stuff, and it's really dope. But they were saying, like, you know, I would have loved, like, my first 8 to 10 years, nobody knew who I was. And it's good to just kind of be who you're going to become, work on it for a number of years and then get that exposure. Because then if you do get exposure and then they have to put your name on the backdrop of your special, then it's like, it's kind of like, then what is it really? But it's still, but even though it's definitely, you do a half hour, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's, at the same time, it's kind of like, whoa.
Well, I think everyone's name has to be on the backdrop of everything because no one gives a shit about comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better that I am always in the camp, I am lately anyway, of just being completely honest about what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Because two things that are absolutely not true for anyone pursuing to do comedy is that anyone gives a shit about any comedian. You could ask, I mean, of course comedy fans do.
Right.
And I'm not being like pessimist. I just like it. I like thinking of it as honestly as possible that it does not offend me when someone, and people always think this offends comedians, I make some joke that pisses people off, which doesn't happen often, but on Twitter, my God, these men's rights activist guys, they were just coming at me so hard just because...
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It was so dumb.
What was it about? What was it?
I made one joke where I said, men's rights activists aren't that insensitive. They don't mind crying all day. And they just would not stop. And I was like, well, you guys are kind of proving my point, aren't you, by being so upset?
Whining about it, yeah.
But they love to say, anyone likes to say about a comedian, they go, who? Never heard of them. And I'm like, name me 10 comedians you've heard of. Like,
and they probably could.
And then we're going to knock down all the Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, you know, superstar status for the last 20-something years.
Right.
And then, obviously, Louis C.K. or something. And then, but there are more good comedians now than there have ever been, ever.
That's true.
And yet, people just love to pretend like they know anything about it. Or that, you know, like, no, there's no good comedians today. I'm like, you don't watch comedy.
Right.
So it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, it's the same with music. Oh, it all sucks. I'm like, yeah. Dude, the place that you're going sucks. There's really great shit out there.
Yeah, you there's too much to say that like some medium is dead.
Right.
But with comedy, that's why it doesn't bother me. And the other misconception that people like to purport is that they are just like cruising, you know, that they're just killing it money-wise or something. And it's like, I make a living from comedy, but it also involves being, you know, planning for being broke for like a certain amount of time, stuff mm-hmm. like that. And it's by no means ever a dream job or anything.
Sure.
It's just all I want to do. But there are people that like on, I think if Facebook didn't exist, there are people that wouldn't do comedy because there'd be no one to brag about being a comedian to, you know?
That's really profound. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
No, I just mean like yeah. They are more, like into that. And so like, if you're doing some feature gig on for a casino but it's like, that's great that you're doing it. But like, who are you trying to impress by acting like this is making you a living? Because I know what that pays and it don't make a living.
Right.
And it's that kind of delusion that makes it okay to underpay comedians and stuff because they act like you're getting paid in
accolades and
stage presence. Sure. I don't know. Like there's I'm going to try to start no shit, but there's like gigs that like Madison, Wisconsin, it's known to all of us. I've done it several times and everyone knows it as a cakewalk, you know, that you go up there. It's very easy to kill. There's a lot of
Comedy Club on State?
Yeah, Comedy Club on State. It's very easy to kill, and it's very, you know, people record albums there and stuff, and it's a great weekend. And because of that, they underpay you.
Oh, shit.
I mean, there was a time, hopefully it's different now, where the bookers that booked it and stuff, you did five shows and got $300.
Oh my
for a fucking feature weekend.
Did they put you up at all?
Yeah, but that's still criminal.
But you want to do it because you love it. And I think it seems like some of these places, they know that we love
they act
to
like,
perform.
Like that's a substitute for being underpaid because they're making mm-hmm. money hand over fist. Mm-hmm. I mean, and enough to properly pay it. And so I never try to let that slide, really, because it's like, fuck you. You're taking advantage of people.
That's real shit.
And it sucks that people are just down to do it because it's like, yeah, but it's an awesome weekend. It's like, well, it's still, you're doing the work, mm-hmm. you know? Just because you enjoy it doesn't mean you get less money. Although that rule is true where the stuff I don't care about is the stuff that pays and I don't know why. You know, you could do some college. It's like the worst, and it really doesn't bother me. I just get the job done and make it sound, you know, I try, and then I don't care because I'm getting paid way more at that time.
Now you brought up a lot of things that we can.
Oh, sorry.
No, I like it. No, it's great. First off, talk about those college gigs. How is it to relate at 33 to a bunch of kids?
Well, to be honest, I don't think I've done a college gig this year, so but okay.
But when you were doing
last them. Year, well, it's you don't relate really, you relate as much as you can to because you're not just relating to college kids, you're relating to the college kids that got nothing to do on a Friday night, got no friends,
wow,
or their group of friends are, you know, kind of dorks or whatever, and
or people went home,
whatever it is, they got nothing else to do but go to the school-sponsored comedy show, and you know, they're it's not like a blast ever. It's sometimes it's like way better than you thought it'd be, or like, hey man, those kids were on board. But as a rule, it blew my mind that people were jumping on Jerry Seinfeld shit, criming up his ass about just saying that college crowds are uptight. And I was amazed to hear that he does colleges.
Me too.
He's a fucking billionaire. So that's hilarious to me that people were just all up his ass like that's not the truest statement ever. I mean, everyone knows that colleges, as a rule, are very uptight because they're kids that don't know anything. And especially when they're at a school-sponsored thing, and that's why I never cuss. Not anymore. Even if they say we don't care about being clean, you can say whatever. I don't, because they are like, whoa, wait, is this okay? You know,
is it okay to laugh? And
yeah, they just don't. It's just not a comedy show. It's just a, you know, but it's great because they have a budget and they have to spend it or they don't get it the next year. So, you know, vis-a-vis comedians get paid more than we normally do.
Yeah.
So that's why it doesn't bother you at all.
Sometimes it seems like when you do get those big gigs that pay a lot of money, it's sort of payback for the time that you didn't get paid or you got...
Well, it's also for the trouble of it. You know?
Right. And it's hard. I remember just going to a club, doing a one-nighter, doing two shows, and it was at a restaurant, and they had like a back room, and you know, where they did the show or whatever.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, this is the menu. You can get half off. I was like, I'm not eating here. I'm not eating here. I'll go to a diner and eat. You know, I just, it's, yeah, really, you can't.
Yeah, it feels, that's the one thing about comedy that's good is that you can have, almost because we hardly get anything, you can have some pride and sort of tell people to fuck off. Like,
right.
And I mean, not like just burning bridges for no reason, but mm-hmm. when someone is like just overwhelmingly an asshole or is just not cool at all, and you know that they are not cool, it feels so much better to not, even if it's someone that could maybe pay you $150 someday in the future, sometimes it's better to just be like, hey, fuck you. You know, and I've done that a couple times, and I've never been wrong yet. Because I don't do it for no reason, but I never regret doing it.
Do you remember what that reason was for this particular situation? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll
go ahead.
I want to hear these stories because, I mean, I'm starting to do the road a little more. And uh-huh. One of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because we were talking at the stand last week, just I was asking you about what your process was for doing your album. Because mm-hmm. it's something that I want to do within the next year. So
yeah.
So just talk about that experience okay. where you had to tell that guy.
Well, there's a this is very early on. So I was like maybe just starting to like be able to feature stuff and was trying to feature more. So anyway, I was at on the road, especially in the South and stuff, there's a lot of Comedy Zone is a common, and most of them are complete garbage. I'll just be honest. They're sketchy. If you're talking about the Comedy Zone in Charlotte, North Carolina, that's kind of their hub. That is a nice club. That is a great club that is run by the same people. It's just that's the only one where you'll see certain comics that you won't see at other ones. And especially at the time, Comedy Zone was mostly, well, it was the first thing my friends started doing. And then I learned that they don't, they'll like go to a fucking, you know, seafood restaurant and convince them they need to do comedy, and they don't care that it'll never work out because they at least get that initial money. And then they do things like, if you're a comedian, you'll get a check that's for more than what you thought you were getting.
Oh.
And you're supposed to send the remainder to Comedy Zone.
What?
Yeah. Like, for instance, let's say you think you're getting $150. You might get a check for $250 or $300 or whatever it is. And you'll be like, whoa, hey, I don't want any problems here. I'm not getting... And it's like you're supposed to send that remainder to Comedy Zone in some sort of, you know, hiding money situation. And probably, you know, for all I know, I don't know this to be a fact. If anyone is, I know that they do that for a fact, but I won't say that it's a, you know, some sort of tax evasion thing because I don't know for sure what it is. I just know it's sketchy and that I'm being paid to do comedy, not handle money. So anyway, I didn't agree with what they do because they're just a sketchy company. And there are stories of how, you know, shitty they are. And then I found out that the guy who, one of the guys from there, who had never seen me live, considered me back of the room, you know?
Oh, back of the room, for comics
or something like that. So just knowing those two things, that this place is sketchy anyway, And this guy doesn't know me, but he's saying how my comedy is. I was just thinking, fuck this asshole. So I'm never going to be nice to this guy. And I've hardly ever talked to him, to be honest. But when I did the, I think it was the first Laugh Your Asheville Off, that thing. Mm-hmm. They're all down there or something, and I had a good set. And I, when someone said, I was in the green room, they go, oh, man, you killed. And I said, yeah, I guess those 400 people were in the back of the theater. And then,
oh, shit. Shots fired.
That guy just didn't know what, I think, I mean, he's like, what? But then later when they, I just never sent them anything. I don't, and it's never, I never regretted just not fucking with them because I've only heard of bad things coming from fucking with them. So, oh, I should mention, in it, I forget that people here, when I say fuck with, they think I mean mess with. Or something. Like in Atlanta, it just means do business with, you know.
Oh yeah,
like fuck with
yeah.
it. Obviously, you know, but
I thought that's that seemed to be universal. It's not a unit.
Well, I've had people here. I don't think of myself as that. Like, I'm definitely not like, you know, sound like I'm right from zone three or something. Like,
you,
I don't know.
You do, yeah, you it. Just, but I knew what you were saying because like, oh, I don't fuck with.
Yeah, yeah.
Stranger Things or well, whatever. Yeah, like, yeah. I don't fuck with that
album. Well,
just
the other days I said something like that and people... I, whenever I say right quick or or something like that, people always point it out. Or if I say y'all, like...
Yeah, that's...
Like, we don't know what I'm saying, yeah. y'all.
See, I'm mid-Atlantic and Maryland to people from up here is the South. And yeah. I have roots in the South, family in the in North Carolina, Virginia. Yeah, and I remember being in Chicago, in suburban Chicago, Skokie, Illinois, being a teacher.
Oh, shit. I've been there.
I love that place. it's because the best, my listeners know, but the best job I ever had in my life was being a camp counselor at this theater camp in Skokie.
Skokie, Illinois?
Yeah, it's Skokie Park District.
That's funny.
Right next to, you know, right next to Evanston, Northwestern.
Well, I don't know that well. I just know that my whole family is from... Central Illinois.
Okay.
Like Pontiac and Odell, Illinois. Odell, you've never heard of, I'm
no.
sure. It's just...
That just sounds like a mechanic.
It's 1,000 people in a cornfield is all it is.
Okay.
But anyway, that's why the only reason I've been through Skokie.
Is okay, because, yeah, Skokie is... Was it like the North Shore?
Yeah.
Like maybe 15 minutes outside of Chicago.
Yeah, I've been to a wedding there or something like
okay.
that.
Okay.
But... Yeah, that up here in New York, I hear ridiculous accents that are
yeah.
cartoonish. I'm just used to them now. But people always point out to me when I say something that I'm aware of what I said.
y'all doesn't seem, but I didn't, it didn't seem like a thing to me. But when I would say, hey, y'all get down from that swing or whatever, yeah. y'all, they say, you always say y'all.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's a contraction. I mean, yeah. we know what y'all means. That's why
weird.
You say it.
Nah, it's just, I guess. Yeah, New York has the most, what do you call it? I don't know. New York, a lot of people say different shit.
Yeah, well, I've never felt more aware that I'm Southern until
I really don't,
lived here.
You have a slight Southern lilt.
Barely.
Is it because you've been here for a while, or is it?
No, it's just because I'm the only one in my family that's ever grown up in the South.
Oh,
like my
okay.
mom and dad both moved from Illinois
okay.
to be before I was born or whatever. So I've never grown up with, I don't know. When I was a kid, I sounded like a little redneck or something. I saw a home video of me.
Mama, we fixing to get some biscuits.
Yeah, I was just like twanging, man.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that, but I was like, you know, probably 5 or 6 or something.
I know when I go.
Like, give me that basketball, you know, or something. I was outside playing basketball.
Like somebody like David Cross, who's from...
He's from right where I was, near
yeah.
where I'm from.
You don't really get it with him. Like, I don't really notice it
yeah.
when he talks.
Well, he's from Doraville, okay. which is kind of... Still, it's in Atlanta, but Atlanta is like basically within a highway of 285. So
okay.
it's inside the perimeter or outside the perimeter. Doraville is inside the perimeter, but that's... There's a song about Doraville. You ever heard of that? Doraville, it's a country in the city.
No.
That's their whole thing, though, is it's in the city, but it's not. I mean, it's like
country.
It's country, but it's not.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what everyone sounds like, too.
Because they would call my relatives would call D.C. obviously the city, but then we lived out like in a suburb of D.C. and it wasn't really.
Yeah, and D.C. is a weird city to be.
It is.
It's all like underground and shit. Like there's no buildings, you know.
Oh, the buildings.
Nothing can be higher than the Capitol or whatever. Right?
Oh, okay.
So like,
fucking Benjamin.
You're thinking Banker. About all those how big of a city it is, but every building you look at, it's like, you know, 20 floors underground. So it's crazy that it's like skyscrapers were pushed down to me. Mm. I don't know. I just don't. I've never got along with D.C.
For somebody that's from there, I know very little except going to museums when I was a kid. And just I was away since I was 18.
Yeah.
And then every now and then, like I might do a show at the Big Hunt or.
Right.
The Arlington Draft House, which is technically it's in Virginia, really.
Yeah.
It's in Northern Virginia, but
Don't you always feel like when you're in D.C. that you're in like the financial district of some other city, and that there's some cool part you're not being shown?
I don't even know how I feel. Like, I went to school in D.C. from like preschool to sixth grade. It's just I don't know, man.
It's like a monument to me, the whole city.
You just it's very clean though.
Sure,
it's cleaner than here, New York. But
here we're just on a garbage heap.
Yeah,
there's just trash everywhere.
Chicago's really nice city. Yeah, I guess the way that I understood cities, I guess, was mainly from Chicago, and then. Moving from Chicago, because also you know the train lines and everything like that, and what's the downtown area, uptown, south side, west side, and then moving here maybe almost 9-10 years ago, I lived in Rockland County for the first couple of weeks, staying with some family friends.
I don't know where is that.
It's like it's maybe about 45 minutes outside of the city.
Yeah, but well, I don't know.
It's
getting out of this city, it can take an hour and a half, and then you're not anywhere. So I don't know where anything is, really. Is this in Jersey or is it in New York?
It's in New York.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's Rockland County is in New York State. And if you're going, if you're going like the Cross Bronx Expressway, and it'll eventually dump you. You've heard of Westchester and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like maybe it's 20 minutes from Westchester. I'm giving you a geography lesson. But anyway, it's not that far. And you're like the suburbs, and we're going to go down into the city.
Yeah.
And that's how I just kind of understood. Oh, okay. And I had that.
Well, that's how my in Atlanta, I was at, you know, you realize that like there's downtown, mm-hmm. and then there's basically, if it looked like a city, we just called it downtown. Even though it's technically, there's Midtown and there's Buckhead. We just called it all downtown. And then,
right.
But really, you find out that Atlanta is just sprawl. It's, you know, you could be in a shopping center somewhere. It's just too big. It's a bunch of counties. It's like 6 million people. But it's not. I mean, the city itself is, you know, a big city, I guess.
Right.
Nothing like here or anything.
Yeah. I mean, I was down the, was it, what are we in?
There's 1989 Atlanta on my wall.
Okay. Yeah, that looks much more buoyant or livelier than North Carolina, Maryland.
If you're listening to the podcast, we're looking at a picture of Atlanta, but that's hardly recognizable now. It's like way more built
so
up.
So much more. Yeah, I need to go. I just but you mentioned that like a couple months ago, July.
Uh-huh.
My parents and I were down in North Carolina, and took my mom to her family reunion, and I was going through like this town, Reidsville, North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
which is where. When I was a kid, my cousins and I would go, and that was the big thing because it was like the downtown. It was we're going into town.
We're going to Reidsville.
We're going to Reidsville, and like they had the Food Lion, the Kmart, the strip mall.
Yeah, down there in Reidsville, they got everything. They got the Food Lion. They got that Piggly Wiggly. You know, it's just like
Piggly Wiggly.
It's amazing that they have several stores.
Winn-Dixie. And now that shit's fucking gone, dude. Mostly all of it's gone.
Yeah.
It's just, and it looks so small. When you're a kid,
Yeah, it's
it
the big...
just it's ah oh, man, it just it brought back a lot of memories, like a lot of good memories. But it, then it's just like, wow, this is fucking small.
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, we would go. Sometimes we go to Commerce, Georgia, mm-hmm. which is just literally one of those. It's not a town. It's an exit with a bunch of outlet stores.
Yeah. You know? Okay.
And it took me until I was like an adult probably to go, oh wait, nothing's called Commerce.
Yeah.
There's no like.
This is where you.
There wasn't
buy
like
stuff.
Yes, Commerce was founded in the 1800s.
Yeah.
And there was like a cobbler's outlet or something.
Yeah.
There's, no, it's like it's a fake place that I grew up believing was.
But
this.
It was the shit though. It was when you a were real a kid, place though, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I didn't care about any of that stuff. But I just like. I liked walking around stores and stuff.
Me too. Yeah.
Because I always find my mom. My mom has white hair, so I just wandered around stores and then. And then I just looked for the white hair lady, and then there we are. That's all I did.
My grandmother, God rest her soul, shit, she might have been in her 70s.
It's weird to follow God rest her soul with shit.
she used to take us, I mean, because she was old, and she used to take me and my cousins and my aunt who didn't drive. She would take us to Reidsville, and we'd go to, like, the arcade. We'd go to McDonald's. And we get to go to Roses. Roses was a... Did you guys have Roses?
No.
It's a department store. Maybe you would have had Belk.
Yeah, we had Belk.
So it was basically... Roses was basically Kmart, though. Belk was a major, like, a department store.
It sounds kind of like Steinmart or something.
We didn't have that. But it was basically the Roses. Yeah. You could get an action figure or some shit. You could get... You know, you could have a little
Marshalls
money.
Or some shit.
Yeah, well, no, it wasn't... Marshalls.
Wasn't as broke as Marshalls.
No. Roses was just like, you know, it's basically Kmart because when I was, for some reason, they inched up to Maryland. There was a Roses where there used to be a Kmart, and they had the same shit.
Yeah.
But it was just, but now that I think about it, it seems like that stuff is kind of discount stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, because it's definitely not as nice as you remember it.
No, it's not.
So click that down a bit.
I bought a Louis C.K. half-hour special for $5. Like, his HBO special was in, like, a bargain bin. I was
weird.
Like, oh, shit. And then I bought some socks.
All those places are, however, not as nice as you remember it or whatever. I used to do a bit about Kmart all the time, and... This is a long time ago. It's like one of the first bits I did that people would really come up to me and talk to me about later. And some people got offended.
Why?
Just at making fun of the obvious that Kmart is just like a fucking yard sale indoors. I mean, that's really, it's just crazy. And I would just make fun of it. That's all the bit was.
Were you doing it in the South and people got pissed? Or
no, it was South, North. It didn't matter where it was.
What are you saying about Kmart?
There was one where... A guy, I think at first they wonder if you're just like elitist or something, especially if you're in the South.
Yeah.
And to them, I sound very bougie because I don't sound like as Southern as them.
Right.
Because I'm from the city. And they, so.
This fucking city boy.
Yeah. So
roll
they're like,
tide,
like
fucking
you,
asshole.
You're making fun of shopping at Kmart. You know, it's like, it's there's kind of that element. But when they see you that I'm not like that, it's usually just funny. And, but one guy was sitting in the front row, and they all freaked out when I started doing that bit, and it turned out he was a executive from Kmart.
And what did he say to you?
Well, I bring up in the joke that Sears, that Kmart is like the shitty, you know, going out of business looking place.
Yeah.
And that Sears bought it, and then that Sears is like that. So it's like,
my dad worked for Sears for like 30 plus years.
Yeah, it was the shit and stuff.
Yeah, it was.
But it's like, you know, I do the joke about how they just sit him down in a parking lot and be like, you guys suck, we suck, let's run this whole thing till the wheels fall off.
But that's,
and that guy was trying to explain to me how.
He was like, no. It's no, actually.
What you don't understand is that the reason Sears bought it is because of the real estate involved with every Kmart store.
Yeah.
So actually, it's a smart. I go, okay, well, then I'll change my fucking joke. Because it was a smart business move.
No, dude, Sears used to be the shit, dude. Like, my dad used to work there, and you'd get that wish book with all the, like, around Christmas time, and you could pick the toys. It just, but now it's not, it definitely has that vibe where it's kind of like,
it's a ghost.
This is fucking depressing. Yeah. It's a ghost town.
It looks like a little weird attachment to a mall everywhere. I mean,
but I think that just speaks to the economy, like just the economy dwindling. And
I never know with that shit. I feel like I've been dwindling this whole time. So it really doesn't. it seems like what makes me money or does make money has almost no effect with, you know, the economy that's on the news or whatever.
You just think about like small town. You've traveled.
Oh,
a lot.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
seeing different. Areas and just like
they're gone. They're all, they're all just orbiting Walmarts.
Yeah,
like, it's every town now.
Just and it's like they lose industry. It's just a theme that actually comes up a lot on the show. Like we talk about, we'll talk about gentrification or small town America and how it just doesn't seem like it's the same anymore.
No, I mean it's not existing. I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean also like there is no isolated. Feeling ever. I mean, when I was a kid and we would go to Odell, Illinois every year, twice a year for a family reunion, like in July and then for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And you felt the isolation of being that this town has its own vibe or whatever. And it's not involved. I mean, it's partly everyone watches TV and stuff, so they know what's going on in the world. But with the internet though, it's like, there is nothing that where you ever feel detached or anything.
Yeah.
So I feel the difference of when I was a kid and there wasn't internet, of being in a different place and feeling what it's like to be in that place.
Right.
And now you are always
connected.
You know, you're always right there with your Instagram or Facebook or whatever. So it's, I don't know, it's got to be weird to grow up never feeling like it matters where you are. You know
that's
I mean?
True. It's very true. I never thought of it that way. I never really,
cause well, I am still a little high, so. <That's
right>. No, but it makes a lot of sense, though, because just being away, like, oh, I'm in the country, like I'm in Cascade, Virginia, just where it's just a road, and it's, you know, and it's civilization, you know, there's people in trailers and all that stuff, and it's just like
I love taking in. That's my favorite.
I do too.
That's my favorite part of traveling is not even going. Well, I love going to the food I can only eat there or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think everyone likes that or should. But really, I really like just walking around and not going to something where, even if it's something like, you got to check this out. If it's some first thing. I literally just like being around different surroundings. And like when we did this tour, the Three-Headed Moron tour thing with me, Dave Stone, and Ryan Singer, that was a lot of fun because it wasn't so much pressure on. We were rotating who was closing and everything, and we all did the same time anyway. And it was just more an artistic
endeavor,
although we had guaranteed money at every place. So it was just like, it was just a little bit, you know, it was work, but it wasn't as much as you could make or something. But the funnest part was every night. Just about me and Dave Stone, at least, and sometimes we would just walk at like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. around wherever we were staying.
As white men,
as white guys.
When did you do this? You did. So you
this
did.
Was this year. It was May, April, May.
Okay, so you did Lafayette. I'm just telling the listeners.
Oh, we
Lafayette,
did
Lafayette, Louisiana, Huntsville, Alabama, Chattanooga.
Uh-huh.
Birmingham, Hattiesburg, some good food in those places.
Oh, very, very good. Yeah, definitely got our spots in every place.
Yeah.
It was through the South. I mean, it was through the, like,
I would love to do that.
Down into the deep South and stuff. And these are all independent gigs. Like,
did you do it through your managers or?
No, what? No. Just us. This is all DIY, like stuff like, I've been doing this with me and Dave Stone. We're in the Beards of Comedy. We were the only people touring. I mean, I know that sounds like it's not a brag or anything. It's just quite literally when you're talking about people touring through the country on a constant basis, there was no one else almost at that was our level of not having done much else and but also being a tour. We shared information with no one, so you just had to like figure it out, like just find an independent venue and convince them to do comedy and try and get people there. And now it's so much easier because every single town with any kind of comedy scene has someone that can work as a liaison to, and they expect people to be coming through.
Yeah.
So it's just like, to me, it
that's dope.
It's nice to tour with friends that much later and find out that it's way better than it was. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it just gets better than that. And then we don't have to worry about asshole agencies or anything.
Yeah.
That, you know, do stuff like overpay you and ask you to send them money and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the funnest part, is just being in different places.
That's what I like. I always like, I just remember one of the best experiences I've had in my fledgling career. Mm-hmm. I did do you know Mike Spears?
That name rings a bell for sure.
He's a comic. He has a show. I think it's a seasonal show where he had at this American Legion in Saugerties, New York.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful. Like I've just start doing comedy in this area. I've fallen in love with upstate New York.
Yeah, like Hudson Valley and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, and just doing all these shows. So I go up there and I'm driving. I'm there early and I see like oh the Saugerties Lighthouse. And I just said, I'm here early. I parked mm-hmm. and I walked around and I went to the lighthouse and walked, just took a couple shots. This was like maybe 2 years ago. And then I ran into I ran into a couple that they were just talking and he said something like y'all or
yeah.
I said, you guys. And then I kind of opened with that. I was like, you guys sound like you're from
yeah.
the South up here. It's like a different
they
world.
They do. Yeah. They do. I did a gig at a roadhouse that mm-hmm. felt like a roadhouse. It was called Al's Roadhouse or something.
But was it up there?
Yeah. It was Broad Albin, New York. And you could have told me I was in Columbus, Georgia. I wouldn't have known the difference.
Yeah. And I opened with that, like, and they just laughed. And I wouldn't have gotten that if I didn't, you know, right. Stepping out of my comfort zone. And
well, here like in New York, I mean, comedy in New York is like nowhere else. So people think that, hey, what's up? This is Brian. He's making a brief appearance.
Hey, Brian.
Not through sound, but it's my roommate. Anyway.
I'm a comic.
Well, people here, yeah, he's comic.
Cool.
People, think that the road is like just gold, whatever it is. If it's not here, it's great.
Yeah.
It's like you're crazy because I've done bad gigs here for sure, of course, mm-hmm. but I've never felt worried for my safety or anything in
right.
New York, but I have definitely felt that way on the road where it's like I might have to just get away from here quick.
Yeah. I don't think I've run into too many like that. It's just been where
that's good.
Yeah, I'm knock on wood. I haven't run into that yet, but yeah, just
not even for pissing off, like because of your comedy or something. It's mm-hmm.
just a
you
weird
know,
place.
If I'm on stage, I don't care who's if someone's heckling or someone's doing something. I talk to them the same way as if they were, you know, not how I would talk to people off stage. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. if there's some massive dude, I mean, he's not going to give me any more shit than anyone else, but.
Right.
But then when you're off stage, you're like, this guy doesn't think that way. unless I want to fight a whole group of people, I better just get paid and get out of
here. Yeah, I had one of those like in Baltimore. It was they call it Baltimore, but it really wasn't. It was just on the outskirts.
I've done things like
shady.
That.
It was at like a VFW type place.
Oh.
And it was just weird. It was me and this comic, Jamel Johnson, a real funny dude. And he opened and they wanted him, he's a black dude, and they wanted him to do like the Icky Woods dance. You remember?
What?
It was like Icky Woods was in the, you know those commercials, I think those Geico commercials where they have the old celebrities. They're kind of like, they wanted him to dance or some shit.
I mean, asking like, people to dance is pretty.
I was like, this is kind of, And then I was doing a bit at the time where I was talking about like I can't wait until Obama leaves because people were treating him like shit. And I was like, I can't wait till you have your country back, the one that you think you lost. And they were like, what?
Yeah,
I got through it, but it was just a shit show.
I can remember the day after Obama was elected. Mm-hmm. I remember I was doing a show in Kennesaw, Georgia.
Okay,
which is some would say a suburb of Atlanta, I guess, but it's pretty far out. It's about 45 minutes, something like that. Anyway, we're doing this gig, and another guy on the show, this guy Alex, the black guy, very funny. He was on stage, and when he said, he said kind of jokingly, since it's a whole group of white people in Kennesaw, he goes, how do you say? He said something like, "Where are my Obama fans at here?" And then two guys in the back go, "They're out celebrating." They're like, kind of like, you need to get out of here too or something.
Oh, shit.
And yeah. Guy, thankfully, he just like kind of stuck it to him anyway. But but I was just like, hey, what kind of fucking person is like, "They're out celebrating." Like, what a
good
garbage.
Night, everybody. All right.
Yeah, it was.
There's been gigs where, like, just like even in rich areas, which I feel a little more uncomfortable in than I would in the hood.
But especially in rich areas, too.
Like Jersey doing, maybe like Western New Jersey. Like, what is it called? Like, I think it's like might be Fanwood or Denville, New Jersey. Just super rich.
Yeah.
And I was doing this show in a coffee house. And it was a really nice coffee house or whatever. And I don't know. And I said something about... It wasn't like, it's not like the black commenters, like, "Where the black people at?" But I just said something where I mentioned something, like, "Oh, they don't live here." And I was like, "Oh, so you guys the black people have a curfew here?"
It's like, "Oh, we've taken care of that."
Yeah. I was like, "All right, I get it. I see how it is."
That's the vibe I got. And it was a nice town. I should say that nothing came up like that. But,
sure.
But, damn it, I can't remember. Hammonton, New Jersey. It was the blueberry capital of the world.
Where
I know
is that.
That.
Is it south or is it?
Got me. West? I drove there, but I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
It's one of those gigs. I don't know the. See, in the south, I know every little town from hour to hour. Like, I've just toured through there so many times, too, that I've probably done a show in every city you could possibly do a show in the south. And then up here, there's just so many places that I'm like, where the fuck's that? I don't know.
Yeah, that's how Jersey is, because I
Jersey's
live in
just a mess of places that I don't know.
I like it, and people shit on it. It's a beautiful state.
Yeah, it's the heck thing to say. It's the Garden State.
Yeah,
it's,
right.
Of course it looks beautiful.
And it's beautiful, and just like, it's like that, I don't know what it is about me, but I think part of me kind of likes that. How are we doing on time?
Oh, I got to do some shit in a little bit.
We got some time. We'll wrap it up.
Okay,
wrap it up.
Cool.
Because I just like to let this thing go until it's like, "Chris, what the fuck are you doing, buddy?"
Until there's an appointment.
Yeah, until there's an appointment. I don't edit these things. I just call this show like I'm the low budget version of Joe Rogan, because I know he goes long. His shit goes long.
Because you don't like fight anybody or anything.
But I don't fight anybody. I took Taekwondo as a kid, and I didn't. It, you know, whatever. But anyway. It's a nice state, and people, you know, people shit on it a lot,
yeah,
but it's beautiful, and it just kind of harkens back to small town America. Stuff is closed at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, it's been nicer than every gig I've done in some Jersey town has been nicer than most towns I've ever been in.
Yeah,
so I don't know where I think it's just like when you're on the turnpike or something. It reminds you of just highway, state road type shit.
And so the shit smell like if you're
and then there's some bad. You know, there's some bad places in Jersey.
Yeah.
So
bad places everywhere.
People like think of like an abandoned building in Trenton as all of New Jersey.
That is true. That's true. Definitely. So I guess I really want to wrap it up with
With your album? Didn't you say you wanted to talk about an album?
Well, I'm going to probably talk to you about
it.
Good. You know, personally, I have your number, so I'll bother you. But anyone is
how many tracks?
You had like 17. 16, 17?
I think there's 16. They might count the intro as a track. I don't know. That's just a big
I thought the track list was on there.
That's the thing that Conan held up. When.
Nice. Conan's fingerprints.
People think it's a record.
Vinyl. Yeah, that's
I'm
what
like,
I thought.
No, I wish. I never got that printed.
Okay. Well, can we close with, you know, your most recent touching Facebook Tumblr post.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you had this very nice personal post about just dealing with depression. And talk about that. I mean, just...
Oh, it was just that
What made you want to do it?
Well, I had a rough time this pretty much this summer.
Okay.
I was just like stuck here. I was just in my room or something if I didn't have to be anywhere. And I don't want to go too into what
as much as you want to share.
I don't, because the thing I wrote or whatever too, I just wanted to talk about, like, that happens to a lot of people where they're in a real rough spot and it's uncomfortable to talk about with people, or you don't know how to bring it up, and so it makes you feel more isolated, and then that's bad for it. So it's just like a cycle that sucks, but it's not, I didn't want to make it anything about what, because it doesn't matter what makes you depressed or something. If you're more prone to it anyway, then it happens, but when things are on top of it, you know, a bunch of things kind of piled up on me at the same time, and it doesn't matter how, because I didn't want to
it's not
make really it about me or something.
Right.
It's just that was why I was in it. I was in a spot because of several things, and I was just like, after kind of feeling like I climbed out of it a little bit, I was talking to my friend about that and just how, even though there is no how exactly, just what I was doing to stay busy and stuff like that. And he said I should write something about what I did, because, you know, because. And I was very amazed with, like, I got so many messages from people that said that it described exactly what they were going through right then or something. And that to think that all these people could message me at the same time and say that they felt like no one else was going through the same thing. So that says something to me.
And it made people less lonely.
That everyone should at least know that a lot of people are going through it. Mm-hmm. So I hate sounding like, you know, if I write something like that, a lot of times it's for myself, too, to just remember things that were my principles or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it helps someone else, good. I also don't like sounding like I'm on, you know, grandstanding or...
No, it never comes off. I don't think the way that you post on Facebook, it never comes off that way.
No, and I'm not that way, so it's not going to, but it's...
I think that's just you kind of judging yourself.
Well, you just always worry about anything. It's just like a word economy thing almost. Like, as long as... With the same with jokes, is if I'm saying something on stage, there has to be a reason I'm saying it. I just don't fluff up stuff. And same thing with life or... what you post and things like that. It's like, I can't just, everything I say has to have a reason why I'm saying it. So you don't want to be like just going on and on about, becoming a person on Facebook that's just always pontificating of, you know, the real world and not being in it. So.
Well, it was profound, and it was definitely, gave it a love. And,
you gave it a love.
So it meant something to me, and it meant something when you posted the thing about stand up. You know, it's just like reminding people that, hey, some of you guys are just in the way.
Well,
you're trying to be a part of.
That's absolutely true, and I did. I took it down though because.
Oh really?
Too many people messaged me asking like, "Who are you talking about exactly?" And to be honest, I wasn't talking about anyone in particular. It's just when you see. You almost feel frustrated, like, "Hey, we didn't all move here to just talk about what's fucked up that comics should be." You know, there's like a lot of dudes that I saw that were younger and in comedy and everything, and they were just like making stands and calling people out and saying this guy's a fucking whatever, and you know, there was a whole rape thing with you know, and of course, like we don't all need to post and be like. For the record, my thoughts are rape is bad. You know, like that's
these straw man.
It's known that, but so it just seemed like everyone was just going off on that. So it did annoy me, but I do regret. I myself am like calling people out if it's if I'm doing that. So I just don't like putting negative shit out there. Like, I'd rather should talk to people in person if I see them doing some shit that I know is dumb and they don't know is dumb because they just haven't been around comedy long enough to know that it's bad to just burn bridges for no reason. Mm-hmm. And so I should just say it to them. So that's my bad anyway, even though I was completely right.
You were, no, you were right. That's why I gave you those good comments. And we'll leave it on that. Andy,
okay.
Thank you so much for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you. Take it easy, everybody.
Boop.